Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Cesar Romero.
Rocio, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I am personally excited for this episode. I've been following your work through Prezi and Latinas in Tech, and this one is close to home because I think the work that you're doing is super important. And with this episode, I wanted to bring you on to talk more about your background, how you got into tech, and any advice that we can share with the audience in terms of how to increase representation of Latinos in tech, how to be mentors, advocates, and really frame the conversation around how to create more opportunities for Latinos in tech. So thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Cesar, thank you for inviting me. I'm super happy to be here today. And yeah, I'll be super happy to take a super loaded question, break it out into pieces and take it. So the very first part is how I got into tech, and a little bit of a story of, you know, I'm Mexican. Both my parents are Mexicans, born and raised. My dad came to the Bay Area to do his postdoc. So I come from an academic and science dad. And I just happened to be born in the Bay Area. But when I was two, my parents went back home. So my dad's postdoc was over. They've been here for 7 years, and I was born in the fifth year. So we went back. We went back to Mexico City. Then at age 9, we moved to Germany. Again, you're a child of a scientist, and they get these sabbatical years where they can work for a year in another university. So we were there in Germany. Then we came back to Mexico, and soon after we moved to San Luis Potosí, where I say I'm from. This is because my parents are from there, and those were my critical years, right? Middle school, high school, and a little bit of college. Then I went up to Monterrey to finish my education in marketing with Tec de Monterrey, and soon after I started my work in advertising. So I ended up working for back then for Ana María Olabuenaga, who's a well-known publicist in Mexico. It was my dream come true. She was the reason why I studied marketing. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I met my husband then, and we decided to move to Boston to be in the same zip code. And I had to leave my super desired job and go to Boston. When I was working in advertising, I was focusing on Mexicana Airlines. It doesn't exist anymore, so I can calculate how old I am. And my job there was to do international advertising. So anything for the airline that was not only in Mexico, that I don't know, was going to appear in Argentina or in Spain, that went through my desk. So I worked with teams in different places as well. So it was that experience that let me join the tech industry here in the US. So as we were previously talking a little bit, and the fact that you're born in the US opens a lot of doors. So in my case, of course, I'm an American citizen. So it wasn't that hard to get a job, right? So for them, to hire somebody with international experience, for back then the position was an international marketing. So they wanted to launch their gaming brand outside the US. And at first I was focusing in Latin America, and then I started taking different regions and countries. And then eventually my husband was studying in Boston, and when he finished his PhD, he was already working for a company, and that company brought us to California, to Berkeley, California is where they moved. And we packed our bags, we came here, and I had babies in the meantime. And then Prezi happened, and same thing with that marketing and international experience, they brought that international experience. So back then, and we're talking about 2010s, companies were like, think of the tech bubble, right? Mm-hmm. So they are born in English and then eventually they want to expand globally. So then is where mm-hmm. I go. So I help those brands penetrate different markets, not only the language, but also the logistics of how is it going to work? Do I need a legal entity? How are you going to charge money? How are you going to promote? Then there's the language, but there's a culturalization of your message, right? Mm-hmm. And even the product, like how is your product going to work in another market? So that's what I was doing. And at Prezi, I lasted for a long, long time. I love Prezi. They really made a big impact in my career. And in fact, they played a huge role in the creation of Latinas in Tech. So in 2014, somehow I remember our investors sometimes suggest that some of your employees meet people from other of the portfolio companies so that mm-hmm. You can, you know, exchange best practices. So then I got introduced to a guy at Evernote. This is something that I learned in Silicon Valley. Even if you're slightly competitors, you're still sharing best practices if you care, especially mm-hmm. Latino. So it was great because he told me, don't do this mistake I made, or do this thing and fast track to success. So sharing those best practices with me was really extraordinary because you don't see that happen, at least not where I come from. Mm-hmm. You don't want any sort of little bit of a competitor to succeed, right? So, and here we are Latinos, right? We I felt like, you know, he cared about me as a person in that career and having other Latinos leading something in their same markets. So with him, I met his team and with him, I met Gretel Pereira, who was a Latina working in tech. And immediately we made a connection. And this was 2014. It wasn't that common, not unheard of, but not that common to be a Latina working in tech. So we're used to be the only Latino in the company. And then so many times the only female in a meeting room. So meeting another Latina was extraordinary. So we decided to go out for coffee like once a month to exchange those suggestions or to celebrate, let's say to talk about our opportunities and celebrate mm-hmm. our successes rather than whine about why not. But that didn't cross our minds. So we were two, and then we said, okay, I have a friend in Facebook. I have a friend in Netflix. So I'm telling you, we are, but we just need to, it was like, you need to find them. So little by little, one person invited another, and we were like hundreds, thousands. And it was all, you know, just talking, networking. And eventually once we were over 1,000, we started building, you know, an organized agenda where we would share stories, have panels and stuff, and then we exploded. And today we're 20,000 Latinas, and we work with, now we are a formal 501c3 mm-hmm. organization, 15 employees, 5 countries, 20 cities, 20,000 Latinas.
I love it. Wow, what an incredible journey. And there are so many follow-ups I wanna make, but to the most recent one, it started, you met another Latina, went for coffee, and you continue the relationship, having conversations, and then inviting other Latinos. What's been, I guess, the biggest shift from your experience in Silicon Valley, you know, from what it was back then to what it is now? Would you say it's easier to find other Latinos, or is it still a barrier, a challenge, whether in Silicon Valley or in tech?
Yeah, I would think that is a complicated question with a complicated answer. Mm-hmm. In 2014, it was hard to find, mm-hmm. and we were relatively invisible to companies.
Right.
But in our fields, we work for international marketing, and very few, like you don't see Latinos back then. Like it's not, it was the only Latina. No, in Prezi we were two.
Wow.
Or 300 people. And the only mom also at the time.
Yeah, another layer, yeah. So
tech industry, you're 30, you're the oldest. You're like, so at that age, the conversation of like not sorry at that age at that year, the conversation about diversity and inclusion was not a topic. Mm-hmm. And people like me or like Gretel or like Luis that were working for international markets, working for Latin America, it wasn't more than a zero to the left for tech companies. Mm-hmm. So companies were focused on succeeding in a global market in English in America. That international was just an afterthought. So whenever you thought and you knew that there was a big opportunity to invest a little bit of resources and get a lot of money from, say, Brazil, like they want to buy with Boleto, like let's just do a tiny little switch and accept millions and millions of dollars. Companies were like, don't distract me, we're busy here. Mm-hmm. So at some point, we were about 1,000 or 2,000 members. In 1 week, about a quarter of our members lost their jobs.
Wow.
Because it so happened that all tech companies decided, international, we need to invest, like stop investing in international. Mm-hmm. They closed international teams and it got huge impact to people like me. It was not the case in my company. Well, actually it was the case in my company, but I was not one of the people that was let go. Mm-hmm. So a lot of budgets for international trade with it people. That was when we were working for international. But then companies started having a little bit of a conversation about diversity. And you would start to see, and I'm talking about 2017, mm-hmm. you started to see companies hiring people with the title of diversity manager, diversity, mm-hmm. chief diversity officer. Back then is when we started our summit, and we had panels where we invited people with those titles, and you would see them all being African-American. And you're like, we still need to talk about where the Latinos leading this conversation. Do they also care, like do things for Latinos? Mm-hmm. So Latinas in tech was like a lot more passionate, and it became a home to people that just didn't have the resources in-house. Then little by little, the conversation has been reshaping from diversity, like bringing in people of color to include people of color. So it is not the same to just hire people. You like you just increase your numbers, but are you listening? Are you giving them the right jobs, the right opportunities, the same pay, mm-hmm. right? So they started talking about diversity and inclusion. So this is the right direction, but it's not enough. It's not, and also I didn't know. Nobody knew, like this is trial and error. How can we better serve a community? I thought we were already like, wow. And then, yeah, they were hired, they were listened, but still like even now, more than 50% of Latinas in tech members have more than 5 years experience, but yet they have the lowest entry level positions. So if you are out of college, you get this entry-level position, but then you have people with 10 years experience doing that. So now with our relationship with ERGs, employee resource groups, we see that they're not getting promoted. When we talk about bosses, they're still very not diverse.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So then they started talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
That is where the conversation is moving into the better direction. So equity is like, it's not only like we open the door so that you can sit on the decision-making table, but now you actually have an ownership on what is being decided.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we are buyers of technology. We're consumers of technology. We need to transition into being makers of technology. We want to want it. We want to raise our voices. We're going to enter when the doors are open, and we have to open those doors, or also from the advocacy side. So companies need to open those doors. So now, like last year, I noticed that finally in my executive diversity and inclusion panel at the summit, they were all Latinos. So things are moving. What was it, 2 years ago, when the Black Lives Matter movement happened after the unfortunate event of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, they brought the diversity conversation into the table. When COVID happened, a lot of companies took their diversity and inclusion dollars because they didn't know what was going to happen. And then when the Black Lives Matter event happened, or it started, they started releasing those dollars because they saw that COVID was not going anywhere. And they started focusing more in Black and Brown communities. So then is where not only Latinas in Tech gets more resources and partnerships, but also the companies start, you know, trying to do a lot more to diversify their workforce. And now we're talking about C-level diversity, board members, diversity in board members, having our voices heard at the decision-making table. And that is going to trickle down all the way to every side of the, not only tech, but every organization. So that's why diversity and inclusion is so important. We focus in tech. 70% of what we do is with the Latinas and Latinos themselves, because there are things they can change today, and we can act together to change the system. But then we 20% of the time we work with the system, so that companies, so that they can enable that change, enable their voices and enable those positions to happen, retain their own employees. That's another thing. Like, don't focus on just bringing talent, like promote your talent. Don't let them go. And then what we cannot change with this bucket, what I call the system, then we work with lawmakers. Because there are things that need to change at a policy level so that we can really, for real, change things for the Latinos.
I love it. I love everything you said, and especially how things have shifted, right? We're making progress. I agree with you there 100%. Yeah, at times I feel like this whole diversity, equity, and inclusion, it was a combination of companies not knowing how to approach it. So it became this checkbox of, oh, we hired a Latino or a Latina, right? Or a minority. So we checked the box, but there was no inclusion as what you mentioned, right? There was no ownership or decision-making.
And then also the employees, like it doesn't do them any good. Like, oh, I'm the diversity model.
Exactly.
You gotta be there because you deserve it just like anybody else. Mm-hmm. So don't lower the bar for us. That exactly. Is
so when you work with organizations, right, what are some of the, I guess, the most common barriers that you notice when it comes to doing this work of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and providing more opportunities to Latinos?
Yeah. Oh my God, there's many and many. Let's start to pinpoint one.
Well, the first one that came to mind. Yeah.
The thing is, like, I think the question is directed, like, what are the most important barriers for people to grow? Is that correct? Or the barriers for us to do this work?
Yeah, when you, because you mentioned you also work with organizations teaming up in their diversity and inclusion efforts, right? So I was just curious to know what are some of the things that you've noticed.
So instead of organizations, I would want to call them the companies we partner with.
Companies you partner with.
We have the heart in the same direction. Mm-hmm. Company is a much more complicated thing. So companies have employees, mm-hmm. and the employees that belong to a certain team that have certain goals, they want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And then the thing is, the company wants to do the right thing, but they're not really. There are other things that they just don't want to do and they don't want to talk about.
Right.
They say, we cannot do this because of legal things, so let's not talk about it. So one of the big things is contingent workers. So that's the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about when you talk to companies, but it affects our community greatly. So that is where I want to really, really dig in.
Let's dig in.
Yeah. So if you talk to a company, say Google, to say one, just to put a name, there's many. So if you hire full-time employees, you can report on their diversity, right?
Mm-hmm.
You
can say how many
people of Latino ethnicity you have at different levels. But if you hire contingent workers, and let's define contingent workers, they are usually, like, within contingent workers, there's many different types, but one of the most important is outsourced workers. Mm-hmm. So I hire an agency that has 1,000 employees, and they work at my premise, they have my laptops, they have my emails, but yet the employer is somebody else. So these employees are like second class citizens. They don't have benefits, not the same benefits. They have the most awkward lunches. They don't have equity, like stock. They don't have a maternity leave. They cannot access sexual harassment trainings. They cannot belong to employee resource group. That is one of the most important. It's like you're an orphan. There's nobody there supporting you.
Yep.
There's no career development program. And most importantly, it works on a specific term contract. So there's people that have 5 years into, I'm not going to say Google, just a company, and they don't have any job security. They will never hire them. In fact, that's one of the things. Once you start with that, they can never promise you to stay. You would need to quit your job and go back to apply to a normal job like a normal person would do. Mm-hmm. So many people in our community, they are like, oh my God, I'm going to be working at Google. But they don't read the fine print. Like, but this is the thing. Like, you're signing up your soul if you join in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how many people do you think in a company that big are contingent in percentage? About 40%.
It's probably a lot.
Very significant. The government is allowing this to happen. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, if you're the boss and you only have like $1,000 for people, you could hire one full-timer or three contingents. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. And you know what? I can fire them so easily. So when COVID happens, guess who's the first people to go? Contingent workers.
That's right. And
they do not do this in purpose. They don't say, oh, you're brown, you should be contingent worker. They don't do that way. That's not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is that contingent workers are in their majority, not always, lower positions. So you require less credentials, you don't need to be as like go to an Ivy League school to be the accounts receivable.
That's a good point. I've never seen a contingent worker, like a CEO or a C executive contingent worker.
For sure. No, for sure. But you can be an engineer, a software engineer or a UX designer and be a contingent worker for sure. It's not the majority. The majority will still be in lower positions. But this is the thing. In the world, if you talk about work, the people that make the most money, the people that make the least money, how do you split the colors and the races?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, people of color are at the receiving end of those things. They are less educated, less wealthy. So when you talk about contingent workers, the proportion of diverse people is higher, but the companies are not reporting on that because they're not allowed, according to themselves, to ask for the diversity numbers of them. So they are not held into the same standards as the company wants to do. They also don't have, the agencies don't have the same money to offer the same benefits that a Google would do.
Right.
So this is the elephant in the room that people need to talk about. And I would recommend don't take those jobs. Read the fine print because they do have a lot of jobs for you that are full time.
Yeah. Right? Well, especially these days where, with the great resignation or the great reshuffle, however you want to call it, and more people, based on what I've read, more people going either starting their own business or going the freelancer, contingent worker route. But what I don't see is what type of jobs, right? What type of roles are supposedly these people going after? So there's a lot of conversation there that still needs to be had. Yeah, there's a great resignation, great reshuffling happening. Some segment of those professionals, yeah, they might be going contingent work, but I still don't think that there's enough there to make it a full-time living. They might need to have multiple contingent work jobs, right? So yeah, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done there. And benefits and all that, it's almost like you're on your own. Like you work for the company, but you're not part of the company. That's kind of awkward.
You're with a group of people in your department. Okay, everybody, let's take a training, but not you.
Right, exactly. So it's just awkward.
Yeah, or, oh, I'm pregnant. I'm going to take this many months of time leave. Yeah, but I'm not. You know, that is not how it should work. Some countries have laws that talk about pay parity. So if you're an engineer full-time and I'm an engineer full-time and we do the same work, but I do less because I'm a part-time. So this only contributes into the problem.
Yeah.
And yeah, I could talk about this all day, but I'm just going to leave it out.
no, it's
a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, no, it'll continue. It'll continue to unfold, hopefully for the better, as more the government companies realize that, continued workforce, there's some changes that need to happen there. Right, to shift gears here, if, let's say, I'm a Latino, a Latina that wanted to break into tech, what would you recommend to this person that might want this opportunity?
First and foremost, I would say, si se puede. It is not impossible, not unheard of, and way easier than you think. I'm going to give you one super clear example. So just last weekend, I was talking with a friend of mine who was waitering at one of my favorite restaurants in the Bay Area, but that's not the point. The point is that she was a waitress and she wanted to break into tech. So she took a course on data science, and now she's a data scientist at Samsung. That took probably about a year or less. So yes, it can happen. Do you want to be a CEO of Google? Probably that's a little bit harder, but it depends where you are. If you already studied, you're looking for a training and pivot, or if you're a high schooler and you want to decide to study computer science and go into tech, you can do that. And now the most important thing is with the pandemic, a lot of the work, a lot of the jobs went remote. So it doesn't matter where you are, you can still work for Facebook. Well, yes, you can work for any company you want from wherever you are. I think the big barrier here is just the language. Like, you do still need to speak English, but you don't have to be in the US. You don't have to be born in the US and be a citizen to work for, Silicon Valley level companies.
I love that. And that's been the biggest realization for me, because I have nieces and nephews in Nicaragua. And I'm trying to tell them, hey, you don't need to move to the United States, and you can look for these opportunities because remote work is happening, right? You just need to make sure that you speak the language, English, right? I think that's probably one of the more important things. I try to talk to them every week and remind them, like, make sure that you learn English, because it opens doors, right? But other than that, I think,
The biggest problem is the barriers that you self-impose.
Yes.
The fear of failure, imposter syndrome, assuming that you're not going to get it, so I'm not going to try. That is the principal first thing.
That happens to me almost on a regular basis. which, that's a perfect segue. Imposter syndrome. I feel like for us, especially for us Latinos, it's a real thing that we have to deal with, right? More specifically, if you are filling out an online application, that imposter syndrome is like right here. I wanted to ask you, Rocio, how do you deal with imposter syndrome? You know, when you were in Silicon Valley and seeing the lack of representation, how did you manage to keep moving forward despite that, those, I guess, mindset challenges?
There was one day in a job in Boston where I needed to hire a marketing professional. And so first of all, also, that's also my personality. I am very narcissistic in terms, I'm narcissistic. I have a lot of self-confidence.
That's great.
So very hard for me to say, oh, I won't. But there was a moment when I thought, oh, I'm going to hire an American marketing professional who probably went to an American school. All my bosses are Ivy League. So far, all my bosses have been Ivy League. It just so happened I got also because I was in Boston, right? Like, it was easy that they were.
Proximity, right? That's the thing.
So when I hired somebody, because I've been faking it until I make it all the time, but now I'm hiring somebody that got an education here. It's going to be tough.
Right.
And she saw that many things she didn't know. And I knew with my Mexican education. So I was like, I'm not as dumb as I thought. I was educated. I just need to trust my education and stop thinking that it's less. In fact, I noticed other colleagues that had like MBAs and stuff that I had that level already. Like the level of math and multivariate statistics that I got taught in my BA was way superior than theirs. So why would I feel less?
I felt the same. Yeah, I'm so glad that you bring that up.
So that's the first premise. Like, do not underestimate your capability or your education, because even if this has the reputation, is it really better? It might be, but just don't go with that premise. Second, for example, when I moved to Silicon Valley and I started working and I saw that lack of diversity, my first reaction is, puppies. They don't know we're cool.
I love it.
It is not their problem. It is their problem. They're missing out.
For sure. But yeah.
We are great talent. We just need to, trust in it a lot more. I trust on my skills a little too much. I shouldn't.
You have to.
Why many things have peeled off. Like, it's what I tell my kids. Like, if somebody's going to come bully you, you know who you are. Those things just, I won't internalize them.
Yeah. No, I love that, because that happened to me going to college and high school in Nicaragua and then moving to the States. I always had this, thinking of, because I didn't go to school in the States, my education was inferior. But I was like, that was silly to even think that, right? Because as you said, right?
What you can do.
Exactly.
How resourceful you are. And if you can fix problems, so what you can accomplish today, like many times you compare yourself with the smartest kid at your school in your class.
Right.
Where is the person now? What are you doing now? You shouldn't be comparing. It's all about what can you be doing now? How can they change their business with you? Do you have what it takes? If the answer is yes, go for it. I mean, you already have the no, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I love that. And I know there's a lot of people struggle with that. So I'm glad that we touched on it. In terms of Latinas in tech, what's your overall vision? Like, what are either one milestone that you want to see accomplished within the next 3 to 5 years as it relates to Latinas in tech?
Well, I guess that contingent worker issue. If we can,
that's a good one.
That is a big one. But we want to be leaders, and to be a leader, it's not all about whining about a problem. It's about acting and causing a change. So I'm looking at that problem as a big mountain that we need to climb, and it's exciting, and we can do this. You just need to figure it out.
That's all it takes. As long as you're committed, right? As long as you are.
What happened? The question is when and how.
Exactly, when and how.
Engineer it back.
Reverse engineer it. That's it, right? Just like any techie would do. And there's a question I want to ask you as well in terms of opportunities. For Latinos, to better jobs, better education, even better healthcare. What's your perspective on this? Any recommendations or any ideas that you might want to share with the audience here as it relates to either jobs or opportunities? How can we create better jobs and opportunities?
Yeah, I think that we need to play the role of Latinos, but also of allies, of our own people. So if you're in a company, make it your mission to lift others, other Latinos, to either bring them with you or help them get promoted, be a mentor. And, you know, you can also take mentors, even if they are not Latinos, but let's be the Troy horse. If you're in, you're that Troy horse. Mm-hmm. No matter if you're blonde, blue-eyed Latino, or if you're just blonde, blue-eyed, we need those Troy horses that can help us bring in more people. Because the more Latinos are out there, the more doors will open for more people to come. So if one Latino takes the role of mentor, five Latinos will benefit somehow on average. So that is very important. And that is not only for people in companies. You can be an amazing catalyst of change at home, a dad that helps his daughter, a cousin that is helping somebody, or a teacher or a colleague, especially men and women. Like we all need to, like a Latina needs to help a Latina. And right now we need that. It's not all about like, for me to grow, I need to push somebody down. Mm-hmm. That is not the case. And sometimes it's assumed in other countries, but that is not doing us any help. So what Luis Zambra did for me then, right? Your success is my success. That is the very important mindset that we need to change.
I love that. You know, especially if you are someone that's higher up and you can help others on that same path that are coming up or they're in the middle.
Yes, but I want to interrupt you there. Not especially. If you are a manager and you have nobody above you that is a Latino, it's a clear sign that you are that mentor. You're that person.
Mm, yes. Now.
So if you're in the most bottom, then look to the sides or look outside. But you can always be that person. Don't say, right. Well, you know, there's a CEO, or the CFO is a Latina. She should do it. No. What are you going to do?
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love it. I feel inspired. I try to be a mentor as much as I can, because I know, you know, all the opportunities I've had personally. So I just have this drive to pay it forward as much as possible, right? And I still feel like I'm not doing enough, but it's a good place to start.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Awesome, Rocio. So to wrap it up, I always like to ask my guests, how do you stay up to date on your skill sets? You know, things that you're reading, maybe taking a course, favorite book, anything that you can share with us into how you keep your skills sharp?
This morning, I attended a webinar from Harvard University. It was free. Why not? It doesn't cost anything. It was about power for all. You know, be curious. Read things. Read the news. Get educated. Apply for something. There's so much free education. Latinos in Tech offer tons and tons of free webinars every week. Maintain yourself informed and current with information. And there's nobody that can say, oh, I know everything. That's not the case.
No.
to improve, and you do not need to be wealthy or at all. There are so many free resources.
I agree with you. It's I keep hearing that often. Stay curious, because in a world where knowledge is Google, right? One Google search away these days. Stay and curious.
I don't know that. Like, what's a Google away? You do know that.
Yeah,
you do. Learn it. You just have the curiosity and the willingness of learning. And a little retention, but yeah.
That's right. Awesome, Rocio. Well, thanks so much. I feel like we can have many more follow-up episodes on these important conversations. But for now, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the show. And what's the best way for people to reach out to you, to connect?
Do join Latinas in Tech, latinasintech.org. And it's not only for Latinas. Latinos are welcome, or non-Latinos as allies. All our resources are free, and we do not discriminate. Anybody's welcome. We have our summit coming up in May. That's latinasintechsummit.org. We have a startup competition that grants $35,000 non-dilutive cash, so free gift to three winners. Startup companies are the ones that get the money. You know, I don't do a lot of social media personally, but if you want to connect with me, my Twitter is Rocio Medina. Those are the ways you can connect with
Perfect. Me. And we'll make sure to include in the show notes links to the upcoming summit to make sure we spread the word.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much, Rocio. This has been a pleasure. And looking forward to many more future episodes with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.